You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the week of September 5th, Douglas County News Press, read by Kim Bowie Barnett. Today, we will be reading the following main articles. Tea experience in Parker is family affair. Mental health care site for teens approved for Castle Rock. Castle Rock town council members face challenges. First female nurse to become Army Ranger is from Lone Tree, and following up with miscellaneous articles. Tea Experience in Parker is Family Affair by Haley Lena. After months of anticipation and hard work, siblings Victoria and Patrick Lum have opened a second Tea Street location in the metro area, bringing a piece of their Asian heritage with them. The new location in Parker is special to the family because it is close to where they grew up. "It's a reflection of who we are," said Victoria. Inspired by their family's history in the restaurant business and years of studying tea abroad, the Lum siblings opened their first store in 2018 in Denver's Colorado Boulevard shopping district. The Parker location introduces their authentic taste to a smaller, more closely knit community. The opening comes after a difficult period for the family. The siblings lost their mother a few years ago, and Victoria said the months after was about healing and finding purpose. They went back to the fundamentals and spent time understanding tea. By 2022, they felt they had healed and were ready to open another store, and then began planning. The months of construction allowed them to travel to Taiwan, where their tea is sourced from. There they worked to refine their skills and redefine their menu. "We weren't trying to rebrand ourselves," said Victoria. "We wanted to elevate and continue our education in what we were doing, studying how we could make our product better." Their menu includes items like slushies, lemonade, Vietnamese coffee, and now dumplings. The machine in the dumpling showroom in Parker prepares the dough, mixes the fillings made by Tea Street, and is folded, making up to 1,000 per hour. But according to Patrick, the dumplings are just a vehicle for the sauce, which was made by their father and used in his own restaurant for more than 40 years. Not only are they delicious, the dumplings serve as a constant reminder of their mother. "Whenever I look at dumplings, I think about love," said Patrick. Ultimately, Tea Street is about helping the siblings discover their heritage. They are Chinese Vietnamese, which is shown in the architecture of both locations. The circles and the straight lines are representative of traditional Chinese architecture, said Victoria, which is a harmonious joining of heaven and earth. As the siblings are on a continuous journey to defining their identities, Victoria said they're excited to be part of the lively Parker business community. Tea Street Parker is located at 16522 Keystone Boulevard. More information can be found at www.teastreetdenver.com. Mental health care site for teens approved for Castle Rock by McKenna Harford. Amid neighborhood opposition, the Castle Rock Town Council approved plans to convert an assisted living building in Metzler Ranch into a mental health care center for teens. The council voted 4-3 in favor of zoning changes that allow for the repurposing of the former Graceful Senior Living facility. The changes allow for the building to be used for inpatient mental health care for youth experiencing mild to moderate mental health conditions. The site will be run by Sandstone Care. The organization plans to care for up to 36 youth between the ages of 13 and 17 through a voluntary inpatient program to treat conditions like anxiety, depression, disassociation, and compulsive behaviors. Patients typically stay at the center for 45 to 60 days. We're trying to treat people ahead of the game when they're young and the symptoms are just developing, said Dr. Jason West with Sandstone Care. The site will be prohibited from treating youth with severe mental health conditions, such as active suicidal ideation, manic behavior, and hallucinations. It will also be prohibited from serving youth with substance use disorders or those with a criminal record of a sexual or violent nature, as well as providing court-ordered treatment and outpatient care. The list of prohibited uses came from listening to the neighbors and the questions and concerns they have, Tara Vargish, Castle Rock's development director, said. Representatives for Sandstone Care said the facility would be the 10th in Colorado and would help alleviate demand for mental health care services. In 2023, Sandstone treated 150 patients from Douglas County at their other Colorado locations. Sandstone's Katie Kaufman said, Sandstone takes security and neighbors' concerns seriously. We've seen one pattern throughout our projects, and that is the community concern and opposition happens at first. However, when these projects are approved and up and operating, they do find that we're good neighbors, Kaufman said. The building's security will include a video surveillance system called Eyes On that alerts staff to patients' locations, and patients will not be allowed to leave the building without an escort or a guardian. The building will be staffed around the clock. If a patient runs away, law enforcement and the patient's emergency contact are called. Patients are only discharged into their guardian's care. Some neighbors who spoke to the town council opposed the change, raising concerns for public safety and that their property values could be harmed. I understand that the community probably does need some help for mental patients, but why does it have to be in the middle of a neighborhood in my backyard? Miles Negley said. I don't know what's going to happen if a kid sneaks out. A few public commenters advocated in favor of the rezoning because of the need for mental health care locally. Two former Sandstone patients also spoke in favor of the new site and shared their personal experiences with the program. Because of Sandstone Care and their mental health services, I was able to heal myself and see a purpose in life, said Kelly Butzer, who was treated by Sandstone at 26 and now serves as the alumni manager. I wish there was a teen mental health program I could have gone to in my youth, because I would have saved myself years of hurt and suffering. Council members reflected the community's split opinion on rezoning, with some feeling that security has been adequately addressed and others still worried about the location. Council member Ryan Hollingshead said he's seen the increased need for mental health care as a high school principal and believes it would be a valuable addition to the community. If these kids chose to go to a place like this, these aren't the kids looking to cause trouble, Hollingshead said. I do understand the fears of the neighbors. It is unpredictable, and there could be one, but there also could be one in your neighborhood or driving on the streets. So I think the one in a million chance, we can't make all of our decisions based on that. Councilmember Laura Cavey said it was a difficult vote for her because she supports expanding mental health care services, but had only heard opposition from neighbors. If I make a decision to support the community, then people are going to say I don't support the children. And if I make a decision to support the children, then the community is going to say I don't support them, Cavey said. For me, I was elected by the community, and I've got to do the will of the people. In the 4-3 vote, council members Cavey, Tim Dietz, and Desiree LaFleur voted against the rezoning. Castle Rock Town Council members face challenges, by McKenna Harford. 4 of Castle Rock's town council members are seeking re-election this November, but all of them face challengers seeking to shake things up. The seats for districts 1, 2, 4, and 6 are up for grabs. The districts are currently represented by council members Ryan Hollingshead, Laura Cavey, Desiree LaFleur, and Tim Dietz, respectively. In District 1, Hollingshead faces a challenge from Pam Gillies. The candidates taking on Cavey in District 2 include William Tubbs, Catherine Willey, and James Townsend. In District 4 candidates, Mark Davis and Randy Reed want to unseat LaFleur. And Dietz is facing Kevin McHugh, Paul Cathy, and Karen Lindbergh Jefferson in District 6. The ballot order and finalization of candidates will be determined in early September. The election is nonpartisan, and council members are elected to 4-year terms. One additional council seat could open up in November if current council member Max Brooks resigns to represent Castle Rock at the state capitol. But Brooks would need to win an election for state house for that to happen. He represents District 5, and is running to represent House District 45. Council members are allowed to serve concurrently as a state legislator, so he could remain on the council even if he wins the state house election. If Brooks's seat opens up, the council will appoint someone to fill the remainder of the term. First female nurse to become Army Ranger is from Lone Tree, by Haley Lena. Following in the footsteps of her dad, uncle, and grandfather, Molly Murphy joined the military. Now, as the first female nurse to graduate from the Army's elite Ranger School, Murphy of Lone Tree is paving the way for other women. I would like them, women, to have the confidence to go do it if that's what they want to do, said Captain Murphy. I love my job, so I definitely encourage them to do anything that they aspire to be. Working as a nurse in the pediatric intensive care unit at Walter Reed National Military Center in Maryland, Murphy graduated from the high intensity course in mid-July. Murphy said she has always been competitive and has always asked herself what she could do next. Murphy grew up in Lone Tree, attending Eagle Ridge Elementary, and later graduating from Highlands Ranch High School. From a young age, Murphy knew what she wanted to do with her life. I was one of those kids who just kind of knew I always wanted to do something like helping people, said Murphy. While pursuing her medical degree at the University of Nebraska, Murphy became the 4th-generation military recruit in her family as she joined the ROTC program. Not only was it a good way to help pay for college, Murphy loved the structure of the Army and the various job opportunities. With her background, Murphy went to work in the pediatric ICU and said it has been really rewarding as she gets to be there for the kids, but also the whole family. Especially since our service members have so much going on already, said Murphy. Some of them, their kids, end up in the hospital when they're on a shift with no communication. Having experience as a nurse at Tripler Army Medical Center in Hawaii and with the Army's Air Assault and Jungle Operations Training Schools, Murphy considered Ranger School while competing in the Army's Best Medic competition last year. It was the support of her friends, family, and leadership that encouraged her to accept the challenge. "I worried if I didn't go, I would regret not at least trying," said Murphy. "I almost didn't join the military, and then I chose to because I was afraid that I was going to regret not doing it." Ranger School turned out to be one of the most difficult experiences of Murphy's life. The school focuses on physical and mental stamina. According to the U.S. Army website, the first phase of the course involves ground patrols, physical assessments, and peer evaluations. The second phase includes leading platoons on combat patrol operations through rugged terrain, while the third further develops those skills by leading small units through airborne, air assault, and dismounted combat patrol operations. The Army describes it as fast-paced, highly stressful, and one of the toughest training courses. Despite not knowing when she was going to sleep and the endless walking, Murphy said her nursing background helped her through the course. "I have to think clearly under a lot of stress at my job, and that was the whole point of this school," said Murphy. "I have techniques like breathing, techniques that I already used at work that helped me in those moments that they were trying to induce stress." Just as her nursing background helped her through the course has prepared her for her medical career. Murphy said she will be able to continue to press on during the toughest moments of her life. "I know from that school, no matter what happens, it probably will not be as bad as Ranger School," said Murphy. Asking herself what's next, Murphy is hoping to either be a nurse with the Special Forces or at the White House. As for her dad, Dan, seeing his daughter accomplish a goal one after the other has been exciting. "It's a very proud moment," said Dan. "I think the community is really proud of Molly." News briefs. Seatbelt crackdown. In an effort to increase seatbelt wearing, law enforcement officers across Colorado have issued 3,911 citations so far this year. Seatbelts have been shown in studies to reduce the risk of injuries and death in vehicle crashes. As of 2023, 88% of Coloradans buckle up, the highest use rate observed in the past 10 years, according to the Colorado Statewide Seatbelt Survey. Arapahoe County had the highest seatbelt use rate in 2023 at 98%. The lowest rate was in Jefferson County at 73.5%. Drivers who fail to comply with the law face fines starting at $65. Parents or guardians found with improperly restrained children can be fined up to $82. RTD's coping panels project ends ahead of schedule. RTD has concluded repairs to the caps on retaining walls along Interstate 25 between Denver Broadway Station and Lone Tree Lincoln Station. That means that light rail trains that were required to share a track, causing delays, are now running on double tracks again. Travel times along the E, H, and R lines were expected to improve vastly as of late August. Representative Bob Marshall honored by the Freedom of Information Coalition. Bob Marshall, state representative of House District 43, which includes Highlands Ranch, received the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition's Ruth Anna Citizen Champion Award at the 146th Annual Colorado Press Association Convention in late August. The award recognizes a Coloradan who champions open government, Fred Brown, longtime Colorado journalist and champion of ethics, presented Marshall with the award. Protect and preserve public lands in Douglas County. Douglas County's open spaces, trails, parks, and facilities have issued a reminder about rules meant to preserve our cherished public lands. People should avoid campfires, except in designated areas with outdoor grills or camp stoves. They should also observe the rule that there is no firewood collection, no overnight parking, and no leaving vehicles unattended after park or open space hours. As for pets, it is against the rules to allow them to chase, harm, or harass wildlife. Dogs should be leashed unless otherwise posted. Quarry fire closures and reopenings. The quarry fire, which burned in the Deer Creek Canyon area east of Littleton, is 100% extinguished. However, three areas remain closed until further notice: Deer Creek Canyon, Rattlesnake Gulch, and Black Bear Trails. Hildebrand Ranch Park, Reynolds Park, and South Valley Park have reopened. Arapahoe County seeks input on 2,800-acre property. Arapahoe County wants people to share their views about what's called the Bijou Basin Open Space Master Plan, which is meant to guide the future management of the 2,800-acre property. The goal is for low-impact public recreation while preserving the property's active agricultural uses, such as dry land farming and cattle grazing. Potential future amenities based on public input may include a trail with parking, picnic areas, restrooms, and a multi-use trail system. For information about how to comment, visit www.arapahoeco.gov/Bijou Basin, BIJOUBASIN. Bear Creek Lake Park Trail Run Series. Registration is open for the 4-week trail running series at Bear Creek Lake Park in Lakewood. Races begin at 6 p.m. September 4th and continues every Wednesday evening through September 25th. The series fee is $70 per person. For more information and to register, visit co-lakewood.civicrec.com. Douglas County to honor its heroes at annual gala. By Haley Lena. Douglas County Community Foundations will shine the spotlight on a group of people dedicated to serving the community at its second annual Heroes Gala in September. This unforgettable evening of inspiration and celebration will raise awareness and support, Tara Radloff, Douglas County Community Foundation Chair, said in a statement. Scheduled to be held at Signature Aviation South at Centennial Airport on September 13th, the 2024 Hero Awards will recognize the service and valor of a first responder, a member of the armed forces, a veteran, and a community-oriented person doing life-changing work. The recipients include Corporal Grant Collins of the Lone Tree Police Department, with special honors to the Douglas County Community Response Team, clinician Sophia Lind, Douglas County Search and Rescue, and Emily M. Davenport with Colorado Wildlife Rescue and Rocky Mountain Wildlife Alliance. Veteran U.S. Marine Corporal Ryan Garza will also receive an award. Just last year, Garza was the recipient of a custom-built home in Sterling Ranch from Helping a Hero 100 Homes Challenge, a nonprofit-led effort to house veterans. For over a decade, Garza had observed October 3rd as his alive day. It was that day years ago that his convoy was struck by an improvised explosive device while serving in Afghanistan, resulting in the loss of his right leg and a traumatic brain injury. Following his service, Garza told the Douglas County News Press that he struggled with his mental health, but found strength in helping others cope with their depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideations. He even wrote a children's book called My Journey from Guilt to Forgiveness. These award recipients are making a profound impact on the Douglas County community, said Radloff. They exemplify true heroism in every sense of the word. An additional recognition will be made to the law enforcement finalists from the Parker Police Department and the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. The evening will include first responder demonstrations, interactive fire and rescue experiences, and military displays, community cocktails, and mocktails. Guests will have the chance to meet honorees and might be able to grab a photo with Denver Broncos Super Bowl 50 team members. The award ceremony starts at 7 p.m. and will include special performances by country artist Tate Stevens. The evening will end with a Light Up the Night aerial fireworks display. Funds raised at the gala will go towards the Douglas County Community Foundation's Community Emergency Relief Fund, established to directly assist the community, nonprofit partners, and first responders during disastrous events affecting residents. It also ensures that emergency relief funds can be quickly accessed and distributed. Signature Aviation South at Centennial Airport is located at 8001 South Interport Boulevard in Inglewood. Tickets are available at aesbid.org/ELP/DCCF24/tickets. Golfer's Paradise. BMW Championship brought more than 100,000 fans, celebrities, pro athletes together at Castle Pines Village. By Alex K.W. Schultz. They came from near and far to behold the spectacle. Men and women, boys and girls, young and old, tens of thousands of them. Buses shuttled them in and out of swanky Castle Pines Village nonstop for 4 days straight. Signs off local highways and roads warned of heavy traffic and delays. An economic impact of $30 million was expected for the area. A purse of $20 million was up for grabs for the ones swinging the clubs. At long last, more than 2 years after PGA officials said it was coming, it was here. The BMW Championship at Castle Pines Golf Club in Castle Rock. Some of the 150,000 spectators expected to show up over the four-day tournament from August 22nd through the 25th were rabid golf fans. Others just wanted to be there, to see the Jack Nicklaus-designed course, to hear the oohs and ahs of the crowd ripple through the ponderosa pines, to catch a glimpse of some of the game's biggest stars, stars like Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, and Justin Thomas. Attendees couldn't be blamed for their excitement. After all, the last time the BMW was played in Colorado was a decade ago when Billy Horschel hoisted the trophy at Cherry Hills Country Club in Cherry Hills Village. The last time a professional golf tournament was played at Castle Pines, that was nearly two decades ago in 2006. Castle Pines hosted the now defunct the international tournament from 1986 to 2006. So yes, Coloradans were beyond thrilled to have professional golf back in their backyard once again. It's pretty cool that they're all here in Colorado, 14-year-old Vivian Hallaby, a Cherry Creek High School student, said of the 50 golfers vying for the $3.6 million first place prize. It's neat to see famous people come and go through here. Vivian's brother, 12-year-old Tripp Hallaby, was busy trying to get some of those famous people's autographs. He'd already gotten McElroy, Tony Finau, and Ludwig Aberg, among several others, to pen his oversized golf ball. But the youngster didn't plan to stop signature hunting anytime soon. "It's life-changing," Tripp, who attends West Middle School in Greenwood Village, said of his experience at the tournament. Tripp called himself a big Nick Dunlap fan, but said he couldn't help but root for the local kid. That would be last year's U.S. Open champion and 2012 Valor High School graduate Wyndham Clark, the 30-year-old making his Colorado homecoming. Clark found himself in 22nd place after the first day, but made things interesting after shooting a 4-under and 3-under the next 2 days, putting him in a tie for 5th, entering the 4th and final round. The Valor grad wins PGA tournament in return to home state headlines weren't meant to be, however, as Clark carded a 2-over on the last day to finish in a 9-way tie for 13th place at 5-under overall. Clark still fetched a $344,111 payout for his efforts. "It's been amazing. Denver showed out great," Clark said at the post-tournament press conference. "I had tons of support. It was all in all an amazing week with all the support and friends coming out and all the love I felt." One of the more exciting moments for Clark came on the last day on hole number 10, where he boomed his drive, stuck his approach shot, and rolled in a 24-footer for birdie, bringing the hundreds of fans surrounding the green to their feet. Not far away from the green where Clark had just buried his birdie was Mignon Stettman, who lives right off the 10th fairway. "We love it. We've had a blast," Stettman said, of watching all the people, including the golf pros, walk within a stone's throw of her home every day. "I think the fans are as much in awe as we are." The retired hotel sales director said she was pulling for Horschel because he, like her, graduated from the University of Florida. Horschel finished in a tie for 22nd place. Meanwhile, Stettman said her husband Greg was hoping either 44-year-old Adam Scott or Keegan Bradley would win. Now a 7-time PGA Tour champion, Bradley did win in the end, fending off fellow American Sam Burns, the Swede Aberg, and South Australia's Scott, who all finished one shot behind the winner. Up by the 18th green, as Bradley and Scott partnered on the last day, made their way in from the fairway for their last putts. Fans crammed in tight, craning their necks and holding up their phones, trying to savor the tournament's final moments. "It was incredible," Parker resident Coleman Harris, who was sitting nearby, said of the day and the tournament. "I go to the Waste Management Phoenix Open in Arizona every year. This was just so much better. I loved it. It was awesome." Now, the collective hope is that it won't be another 10 years before professional golf is back in Colorado. Road to top of Mount Blue Sky closed until 2026. Uppermost section of Mount Blue Sky Scenic Byway closed on September 3rd and will reopen in 2026. By Chris Coburl. The highest paved road in North America, Mount Blue Sky Scenic Byway, closed September 3rd to all travel, to the peak, including motorized, biking, and most hiking, as road repairs continue until Memorial Day 2026, according to the U.S. Forest Service. The byway, also known as Colorado Highway 5, closed from the Forest Service gate near Highway 103 in Clear Creek County through the project area above Summit Lake, USFS representatives said. USFS plans to repair the damaged roadway from the Summit Lake overflow parking lot to the first switchback past Summit Lake. Danielle Perrone from Toronto, Canada, stood at the peak of Mount Blue Sky with friends on August 23rd in 40-degree temperatures with a cold wind blowing strong across the peak as she gazed at the view from 14,264 feet with Summit Lake below. "It's raw and fresh. It's God's country," Perrone said. The USFS said its goal is to improve public safety while reducing ongoing impacts to the fragile alpine ecosystem and restore the natural hydraulic process through the area. Traveling the highway to the summit recently made apparent the need for repairs. Cars, SUVs, and pickup trucks crawled up the last section of road between 10 to 15 miles an hour over and across large potholes. The road itself, barely wide enough to accommodate two vehicles heading up or down, heaved with massive dips in the asphalt that required smaller vehicles to crawl up and down the buckled road at a snail's pace. "As you approach the summit, you're enveloped by the high clouds that appear like fog until you break through and realize you're above the wisping white and gray clouds. Once you've arrived at the summit and exited the vehicle, you're in a completely different environment than you left at the start of the journey to the top of one of Colorado's 14ers. The outside temperature is below 40 degrees, and strong blasts of cold winds whip across the summit and blast those who decide to complete the journey to the peak with a short hike to the top. The rocky path to the top leads hikers through at least four switchbacks to the peak, where a brass plate embedded in the rocks marks the summit and elevation. It was placed there in 1955. Once on top, the view above the clouds goes for miles, notably with Pikes Peak to the south and Mount Bierstadt to the west. As Perrone put it, "You're on top of the world." Formerly known as Mount Evans, the U.S. Board on Geographic Names voted 15-1 on September 15th, 2023, in favor of the change to Mount Blue Sky. The name change followed years of lobbying and petitions by the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma to disassociate the mountain from its original namesake territorial governor, John Evans. According to historical references, Evans authorized what's known as the Sand Creek Massacre. On a November morning in 1864, U.S. Army Colonel John Shivington and elements of the Colorado Infantry Regiment of Volunteers and Regiment of Colorado Cavalry Volunteers launched an attack on Arapaho and Cheyenne civilians, where they camped about 180 miles southeast of Denver. Over the course of 8 hours, the troops slaughtered some 230 people, many of them women, children, and elderly, according to the National Park Service. The new name for the mountain comes from the Blue Sky Ceremony, a ceremony for all living things, including men, women, children, plants, earth, water, life, Chester Whiteman of the Southern Cheyenne Tribe said in 2023. Nonetheless, the iconic Mount Blue Sky will return to nature, away from tourists and local traffic, for at least the next year and a half. A couple of mountain goats resting at the peak did not seem fazed by the upcoming changes to their natural environment. Tourists from across the country at the peak said they were disappointed with the closure, including one couple from Raytown, Missouri, who said the trip to Mount Blue Sky is part of a yearly tradition to experience the top of a Colorado 14er and escape the humidity of Missouri. However, the most common sentiment was, if it's to repair the road for safety, then that's what it is. You have to keep it safe, Perrone said. Local voices. Winning words, Michael Norton. From first day jitters to year two road mastery. Correction. From first day jitters to year two road to mastery. As I watched my grandson prepare for kindergarten, I couldn't help but think about the millions of families going through the same experience. It made me reflect on the journey of any new beginning, whether starting school, a new job, or a new role. Last week, in The Joy Found in Continuous Learning, we celebrated the fulfillment of life, of lifelong growth. This week, let's delve deeper into how our mindset evolves from the first day of a new experience through critical learning phases, leading to confidence and mastery as we enter our second year. The first day of any new endeavor is a whirlwind of emotions, excitement and nervous anticipation mix as we step into an unfamiliar environment. We're organizing ourselves, meeting new peers, and We're organizing ourselves, meeting new peers, and encountering instructors or leadership for the first time. The day is filled with potential and possibilities, but also uncertainty. We want to make a good impression and prove ourselves, yet there's a nagging question. Am I ready for this? Fast forward 3 months, and the initial rush begins to settle. We've gotten to know our peers and understand the expectations before us. However, doubts can start to creep in. The novelty has worn off, and the reality of our challenges sets in. We might question our abilities, unsure whether we're truly up to the task. Yet, despite these doubts, we remain eager to learn and motivated to improve. By the 9-month mark, something remarkable happens. The cumulative effects of all we've learned manifest in tangible ways. We've absorbed new knowledge, honed our skills, and faced numerous challenges, many of which we've overcome. Our confidence has grown, not just because we've learned more, but because we've seen evidence of our progress. We believe in ourselves more deeply, realizing that we can learn, adapt, grow, and perform at a higher level than we initially thought possible. As we enter year two, the transformation is profound. We no longer approach our tasks with the tentative steps of a newcomer. Instead, we hit the ground running, armed with a solid foundation of knowledge and a strong belief in our capabilities. Our confidence now drives our actions. We tackle new challenges with conviction, and our performance reflects the hard-earned experience of the previous year. Our attitude is empowering. We know we've grown significantly, fueling our desire to continue learning and evolving. This journey from the first day to the start of the second year is a testament to the power of continuous learning and perseverance. It highlights the natural progression from uncertainty to confidence, showing how with time and effort, we can transform our initial nervousness into a deep-seated belief in our abilities. Learning doesn't just equip us with new skills. It builds our confidence, shapes our mindset, and prepares us for greater challenges. As we embrace each new learning phase, it's important to remember that feeling unsure at the start is normal. But with dedication and a commitment to growth, we can turn that uncertainty into a powerful force for success. The confidence we build along the way becomes the foundation for future learning and achievement, ensuring that each new experience is approached with greater conviction and a stronger belief in what we can accomplish. The speed of learning comes on the heels of learning agility. It's not about how fast we learn a new skill, but how quickly we adapt and apply what we've learned to achieve results. I'd love to hear your stories of moving through the learning journey at gotonorton@gmail.com. When we grow incrementally in our effort, attitude, and skill, it really will be a better than good life. Michael Norton is an author, a personal and professional coach, consultant, trainer, encourager, and motivator of individuals and businesses, working with organizations and associations across multiple industries. CCM Publisher to Lead State Press Group by Elizabeth Slay. Colorado community media publisher Linda Carpio Shapley was named the current president of the Colorado Press Association at the organization's 2024 conference. "It feels like such a tremendous honor," Carpio Shapley said. "One of the things that they have listed in the convention manual is all the presidents that have served, and I am so honored that I get an opportunity to be considered among them." Carpio Shapley feels very proud to be the next leader of the CPA and said she feels history around her, which inspires her to want to continue to do good things for the organization and journalism. Carpio Shapley began her tenure as publisher of Colorado Community Media in August of 2021. She has worked for a number of Colorado newspapers, including The Collegian at Colorado State University and her hometown paper, The Greeley Tribune. Carpio Shapley also worked at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and Kansas City Star before heading to the Denver Post, where she went from copy editor and designer to managing editor in her 21-year tenure. She also led a political team at Colorado Politics prior to becoming the CCM publisher. The Colorado Press Association serves the state's news media outlets. Shapley was unanimously approved. Along with upholding the good work of past presidents in the ever-changing media landscape, CPA evolves to champion media rights, press freedoms, and professional development across the state, the organization said. Carpio Shapley said the CPA faces challenges similar to what the industry itself faces, including an outdated revenue model, the good fight against misinformation, and the need for more journalists. Colorado Press Association is wanting to do what it can to be supportive in that way, but Colorado Press Association also has those same challenges of just trying to do it on a bigger scale, she said. With around 160 newsrooms in the Colorado Press Association, Carpio Shapley said it can be difficult to serve everyone's needs. "They go from one-person newsrooms to news organizations like the Denver Post," she said. "So how do you serve them both when they have so many different issues?" Carpio Shapley said, while it's challenging to help with these issues, she and the CPA need to be aware of these problems and work together to support the Colorado journalism community. I'm lucky enough to have a board that is really supportive in trying to help me to do that work, and I just want to keep moving forward, she said. The CPA is actively trying to get public policy in the Colorado legislature to allow for more public support for informing communities. To me, that's one of the things that I want to continue to advocate for, and I want to make sure that everybody who is a member of CPA has an opportunity to reach out to me and learn about me and know that I am committed to this fight, Carpio Shapley said. Additionally, Carpio Shapley said she hopes to help the masses see the public good of journalism. We want to make sure that we're doing good work, and we need to make sure the public understands the great work that we're doing, she said. Our newsroom wins 14 state press awards by Colorado Community Media staff. Colorado Community Media's Long Way Home series, a deep dive that unraveled the whys and hows of the escalating housing crisis across the Front Range, took home top honors during state press awards. The 14-story newsroom-wide effort was named Best Public Service Project in Class 6 of the Colorado Press Association Awards. Earlier this year, the series won first place for general reporting, series, or package at the esteemed Top of the Rockies Excellence in Journalism, hosted by the Colorado chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. In all, the newsroom received 14 awards, 8 of them for first place during the Colorado Press Association Awards, a friendly competition held among newsrooms of all sizes from around the state. The newsroom's Long Way Home series interviewed ordinary Coloradans about how the rising cost of housing impacts their lives. The series identified barriers many younger residents and people of color face as they pursue homeownership and explored potential solutions. Every reporter in the newsroom contributed to the series by interviewing dozens of local residents, elected leaders, and experts. And that is all we have time for today. Thank you for joining us for the week of September 5th, Douglas County News Press, read by Kim Bowie Barnett.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.